Hello, friends, and welcome to Business and Beers Japan. This episode is sponsored by Gugu. Gugu, it's a name you need to remember. Why? Because stress is not healthy. It leads to all kinds of terrible health issues. And one way to reduce stress is sleep. Getting a great night's sleep is super important. And that's where Gugu comes in. Gugu makes awesome mattresses. And they make the process of buying a mattress even better. Go to gugu.jp for information about their low prices, their great sleep guarantee, also their free shipping, and especially check out the many testimonials from current Gugu users. And best of all, you, the Business and Beers Japan listeners, get a 20% discount when you enter BB Japan into the promo code box. So, reduce your stress, get great sleep, it results in a better you. Gugu.jp. Hello everybody, this is a follow-up episode with Ruth Jarman. In this episode, we talk about her 6 books she wrote in Japanese. We focus on 2 of these books. Number 1, The 33 Reasons Why Japanese Should Be Proud, and number 2, The 39 Reasons Japanese Are Great. We don't discuss all 72 reasons, but she does boil it down to her top 3 unique cultural reasons Japanese are awesome. It's very insightful. She also explains what she hopes Japanese take away from her books, her greatest accomplishment in 32 years in Japan. We discover we both graduated high school the same year and share a couple of stories there. It's a pretty interesting episode. In fact, it's the first ever back-to-back Business and Beers Japan episode. Here she is once more, Ruth Jarman. Okay, Ruth.
Yes.
You are the author of 6 books.
Yes, I am. In Japanese. I wrote books in Japanese. Can you believe that? I mean, that's not even my mother tongue.
That is amazing, actually. You're really going old school about this whole I love Japan thing. Anyway, so you have a book called The 33 Things That Japan Should Be Proud Of.
That was my first book.
And then you have another book called The 39 Things That...
Yeah.
Did you just add 6 things?
No. So that was... It's a good question. The 33 things was the first one, and then I did another 33, which was the second one, which was called Yappari Nihonjin wa Sugoi yo
tteiu. Yeah. Translated is...
Japanese people are great. And so then...
Yappari Sugoi tteiu would be more like, as I thought, Japanese are incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And then the final one was, what we did is we sort of combined the first book and the second book with several more new chapters, so that's where it became 39.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you make a compilation book and just call it 72 Things That Japanese Should Be Proud Of?
Yeah, maybe they will. I mean, I leave that to the publisher, because it's so much work to make these books. It's so much work.
Where do you come up with these? I mean, we could say it's 72 things, right? You got 33 plus 39.
But, I mean, I have limitless amounts.
Okay, so give me your top 3 things that are sugoi or incredible that Japanese should be proud of. Your top 3.
Top 3?
Yeah. And do you want to rank them in 1, 2, 3, like going number 3, number 2, number 1, or do you want to just make it general?
I should probably start from maybe just the top 3 without an order.
Okay. You want to think about it?
No. I would say one of the top 3 is the extreme focus on a long-term view. Is one of the things that Japan can be proud of and that we can all learn from. Never would they want to have something done tomorrow. It's a very consensus-based society. And, yeah, there's really good things about off-the-hip, you know, off-the-cuff kind of decision-making. That can also be very innovative and good. But the Japanese focus on trying to build consensus and trying to move forward together with everybody on the same page is something that everybody could learn from.
Is that one of the reasons why so many foreign companies struggle when they come to Japan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because they don't understand that part of it. That's one thing. Can I say that to other two first? The other one is...
Wait a second. Because that point is very valid.
It is.
And I agree with it. But do you sometimes think that that might hold back Japanese, especially because this is business and beer, so from a business perspective, long-term planning, I think it's also has to do with risk aversion a little bit. So there's a lot of Japanese companies have fallen behind, say Korean companies, some Chinese companies, they haven't been able to keep up, is maybe this long-term view, they're not nimble enough or they're not flexible enough to change to keep up with the competition around the world?
I have a theory. The only way to solve that problem is with diversity. So the point of my books is to let Japanese people know you do not have to feel inhibited about the kind of person that you are. The Japanese sense of how to do business, or the Japanese sense of art, or the Japanese sense of communication, it is so important in this world as one aspect of humanity.
But what do you mean by diversity?
What I'm saying is that, okay, we had the world financial crisis, the Lehman shock as they know it in Japan.
Yes.
I truly believe that if the board of Lehman Brothers at that time had included an Indian person, a Japanese person, and maybe several other people from other countries with different styles of doing business, never would have happened. Because the Japanese person, if they had had enough confidence in themselves, and if they had enough confidence in them in the long-term view that Japanese people usually have, they would be saying, wait, what? What do you mean? How did you bundle these, you know, mortgages? Could you say that again? Because I don't get it.
I've worked for 3 Japanese companies throughout my career in Japan. But if I were to, with those Japanese companies, I wasn't an executive board member of any of them. But none of them ever came to me and said, you know, hey, Andrew, we would like to know your opinion about this, that, or the other thing. Never happened.
So in those Japanese companies, what percentage of their revenue was from outside of Japan?
That's a good point. Very, 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 very little.
Yeah, so they didn't need your opinion. They were functioning, like, up until now, Japan has been basically JAL on the domestic flights. 99.9% of their customers have been Japanese. They've never had to think about what to do if a non-Japanese person comes on a domestic airlines flight in Japan. But now, you ready? 2.08% of the population of Japan right now is non-Japanese. Never in the history of Japan, as far as anyone can remember, has that ever happened. So Japan is going through a fundamental change right now.
Still 98% Japanese.
But I believe that by 2030, it's going to be 10% is non-Japanese. I'll just say one more thing, is that I'm on the board of the Kanagawa Prefecture Regional Revitalization Committee. And so we talk about how to revitalize the region. The federal government has given directives to all the different prefectures about how to revitalize your region. Okay? You ready for this?
I'm standing by.
Last year, we received the directives from the federal government in Japan about how to revitalize Kanagawa. So you need to create a new flow of people into your prefecture. One of the 3 points of how to create the new flow of people was how to attract non-Japanese people into your prefecture. That was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that.
But that's a government level initiative, but at the grassroots level, do they really want to have foreigners there?
Well, 18% increase in foreign residents happened in Fukui Prefecture in 2018. And everybody is seeing that as like a major success. They're not seeing it as, oh my gosh, you got so many gaijins, what are you going to do about it? They're seeing like, how did you do that? That's what everybody's saying.
But the majority, I've seen some, I don't know who did it, whether it was the Nikkei or somebody, they took a survey of just general Japanese, how they feel about the influx of especially foreign workers into Japan.
Yeah.
And over 50% was either negative or indifferent. Like they weren't sure if it was good or if it was bad.
Well, yeah. Well, best of luck to them. Because it already started, it's not going to stop. In 2018, out of all the new 20-year-olds, you know, Seijinshiki, right, where everybody comes of age, all of the 20-year-olds in Shinjuku in 2018, 45% were non-Japanese. Bring it on, baby. It's already started. You can't avoid this anymore. And those are people living here.
Whoa.
In Shinjuku.
Nearly 50% of Shinjuku 20-year-olds were non-Japanese.
Yes, 45.6%. And that was announced by NHK. Out of all of Tokyo.
You know your stuff, but that seems a bit distorted.
Right? All of Tokyo, one out of eight 20-year-olds was non-Japanese.
Huh.
And, you know, there's could be lots of reasons. Like, there's a lot of... because all of the Japanese universities are trying to survive with foreign students, right?
Right.
Because the population is going down. It's the demographics that are forcing this to happen.
Yeah.
So the population is going down. So for Tokyo University, Waseda University, Keio University, all of them to survive, they need to get a whole bunch of visiting students.
いいですか? 次はまたグサイランド。
You just heard some data that freaked your mind, so you went back to beer.
Yeah, I think I need to cloud my judgment here.
I'm telling you, this country is going through a fundamental change right now.
All right, I believe you. Okay, so we had the first point. We got a little bit off track, but that's fine. I love going off track. Okay, number two.
Number two is I like the concept of tsukusu, like give your all to everything. I often bring it up in terms of like wives who will give their all for their family and men who will give their all for the company. You know, the concept of taking it to the higher level is really good in Japan. What we Westerners would imagine as this is good enough, somehow Japanese people are able to take it to that next level. Okay. And that is something that I love about Japan.
Now, the flip side of that is more individualism and thinking about me as number one. So is this a group mentality thing that which Japanese are famous for, or is this something different?
I think it's an attitude of it's never good enough. So no matter how beautiful something is...
Tsukusu? No.
So the reason why you can do... Oh, that's a good point. So the reason why you can do tsukusu and give your best or, like, give more than you expect...
Right.
...is because... Yeah.
You give more than you get back. You enjoy giving more than you expect to get back.
Right. Because you never reach the level that you're aiming for. Here it's like... You never are able to achieve the level that you're aiming for, so you're constantly trying to do better.
Because I've always heard this word tsukusu. I've always heard it usually when it's referred to in relationships, family, couples, friendships, but I've never heard that word used in the business sense. So what is the motivation behind employees wanting to take it to the next level? And I know exactly what you mean, because I used to work in Meguro, and right there at Meguro Station, there's a big tall building, and there was a real estate company on the first floor. And every morning, the real estate employees that worked there would be out with those big long tongs.
Yes.
And they would be wearing
their jacket.
They would be wearing a jacket that had the name of their real estate agency on it. It was like a windbreaker. And they would be out there as a group picking up like cigarette butts and empty cans, and they'd be picking up trash off the sidewalk with their tongs, and they were doing it as a group. That is an amazing thing, but if I was hired by a company to do a job, picking up trash before work starts is not part of my job description.
That means that you don't understand the ecosystem of Japan in the areas. So I also worked at real estate for a long time, right?
But this is, I just used real estate agency as an example. It could be a travel agency. It could be a moving company. Anything. It could be anything.
It could be the garbage collector.
Well, so, that's kind of what they were doing.
In Japan, there's a fundamental concept of mirareteru, that everyone is watching you.
Right.
If everybody is watching you, you have to do the perfect job every single time. If you are constantly under the assumption that someone is watching you, then that means in your house you're not going to play the music really loud because somebody is watching, and somebody might be put out because your music is so loud and then maybe they can't sleep. That's why you wouldn't vacuum early in the morning, because that might bother somebody around you who's watching you.
Yeah.
There's all these rules in Japan about community and trying to contribute to the community.
Well, not every company does this, but I thought it was a bit of a PR stunt, because they were wearing these red windbreakers with the name of the real estate agency right on the windbreaker, and they're out in force. It was kind of like, hey, look, we're from this real estate agent. We're picking up garbage, so you can trust us, and we, you know, we're wonderful for, you know, the community, etc. What do you think?
Why do you think a Japanese fan of the soccer team would stay in a foreign stadium and clean stuff up? Like, where do you think that comes from?
No, that's, I agree with you on that point. That was a very altruistic, that was a something definitely Japanese can be proud of.
Actually, I don't think that it's very altruistic at all. I think Japanese people just hate, like, when it looks messy. They hate it. There's something deep inside them that when it looks messy, they want to clean it up. So it's kind of like, I cannot leave this stadium unless I clean this stuff up because it's bothering me.
I agree if it's your house, your neighborhood, you know, your immediate area. But all they have to do is leave the stadium and they're gone. There are people that are paid to clean up that stadium.
Yeah, so that's where the difference comes in, right?
Yeah.
So that's where I tried to say in the book, that mentality of not being able to leave the stadium with paper on the ground, like just kininaru,
yeah.
Like it bothers you.
Yeah. So, but they cleaned their direct area. It was a reflection of them. They didn't go around and like clean section A7 and section B13 or anything. They just cleaned up their general vicinities,
yeah,
right?
They didn't clean the whole stadium because that would be weird. But,
that would be weird.
Yeah.
Cleaning up after oneself is very refreshing.
Yeah. So like it translates into the whole tsukusu idea, because I don't want to let my child leave the house until they are absolutely perfect. Their uniform is right.
Yeah.
They have everything in their, you know, backpack that they need. Their shoes look clean. Their shoes are neatly tied. Their hair looks nice. You know, there's something about the tsukusu part of taking something to the next level, mm-hmm. that is so deeply ingrained in Japan that I appreciate that a lot. And I think that there's a lot that we could learn from that.
Is that also not referred to as perfectionism?
Yeah, maybe. So I'm not saying that it doesn't exist in other countries.
Yeah.
It definitely does. But in Japan, it's the general rule. Like, how does that happen?
That's the default.
It's the default. That's exactly right.
Okay. Number three.
Number three. I guess I would just have to say that I love the part about Japan about being under the wire. That everybody loves to be very subdued in their success. They don't like to stand out. They're always thinking, but there's more that I could do. So they wouldn't be standing in front of people saying, look at this and look at what I did and isn't this great and whatever. It's like, oh my goodness, somebody else who's Japanese won the Nobel Prize. Why? And then you figure out that they discovered something so incredible 20 years ago. Being comfortable with being under the radar is another one that I really like.
Being humble.
I wouldn't describe it as humble. It's more like I don't want to boast. Because I think, remember what you were saying earlier about the risk adverse?
Yeah.
I think Japanese people feel that if they boast about something, it's a very risky thing. So if they boast about something, it's very risky, because what if it doesn't follow, you know, what if it doesn't happen, as they said?
That's a good point.
Yeah. So they try to stay out of the limelight. And I'm not saying that I think that that is a perfect thing to do or a good thing to do. All I'm saying is that that is a unique aspect of this culture.
Yeah. Good point. That's great. So three of the 72 aspects.
Yeah.
Are you ever going to translate your book into English or Chinese or Korean?
I wish I could, but I don't think the jokes would translate.
Are there a lot of jokes in your books?
Yeah, I have a lot of jokes, Japanese jokes, and like play on words and things like that.
Oyaji gag?
Yeah, oyaji gag.
Give
yes.
me one.
But okay, so when I first came to Japan, you might have had the same experience. No.
First coming to Japan? Yeah, I had that experience.
You probably didn't, because you are smarter than I am, but I was such...
Now you're being humble.
No, but I have so many gaffes, so many big mistakes that I made. When I first came to Japan, this is something that could not translate into English. It's very hard to translate.
頑張って.
I literally thought, because I would go to Fukuoka, because that's where my ex-husband was from, right? So I would go to Fukuoka all the time in Kyushu. And we would be driving on the freeway, and I didn't ride in cars very often, because you don't really need cars in Japan, at least in Tokyo.
Yeah.
So we would be driving on the freeway, and I would see Shibuya. You can get to Shibuya in 5 kilometers. Shibuya, 10 kilometers. What? Why are Japanese people living with their focus as Shibuya? Because everywhere you go, it says Shibuya, 10 kilometers, Shibuya something. And I'm like, I do not get this. I thought that Japanese people just lived with Shibuya at their center of the universe. But Shibuya and the kanji for jutai is very similar. So Shibuya, the city.
Jutai, traffic jam.
Traffic jam. So Shibuya, the city, and jutai, which means traffic jam, actually from a first-timer's point of view, the Chinese characters look very similar.
They do. Okay.
So I thought that, why are they saying, because no, Kyushu is much further than 10 kilometers
All
from
right.
Shibuya.
Okay.
So that's like one of the jokes I made.
Okay, I got one for you. What's the Japanese word for cute?
Kawaii.
Right, kawaii, right? You hear it all the time in Japan.
Yeah,
kawaii,
yeah.
Kawaii,
kawaii, kawaii.
Okay? It's an adjective. Looks delicious in Japanese is...
Me too.
Hold on. Did you follow me here?
I got you.
You know where I'm going with
yes.
this. Looks delicious is?
Oishiso.
Right. My grammatical, I thought the word so, it looks delicious. Oishi is Japanese for delicious. Looks delicious. Oishiso. I thought that putting so at the end of an adjective made it seem like, oh, it looks whatever the adjective is. So when I would see baby or a young wife, mother with her baby, oh, kawaii so. What we haven't explained here is that kawaii so in Japanese means I feel sorry for you.
But that's so confusing.
It is.
They should change that.
But did you use that one in your book?
No, but I did have that same experience.
All right. I got to go take a pee.
Okay.
So I got to take a quick break on
so
here.
So are people listening right now?
I think the people around us might be listening. Hold on a second.
So this is not online yet.
You wrote 6 books, and a lot of them are why Japanese should be proud of who they are.
Yeah.
What do you hope to get out of these books? What do you want people to take away from these books when they read them?
When Japanese people read the book, I want them to think, oh, so I can do this. I can do this international thing. I can be myself and still interact with the gaikokujin. I don't have to change. That's what I want them to think.
30 years, 32 years, as you said, you've done a lot of great things. You are a true foreigner success story in Japan,
I'm trying.
Ruth.
Yeah, thank you.
What's your greatest accomplishment? What are you most proud of?
I think I was most proud of... So one of my big clients is Sony Bank. And Sony Bank is trying to make an online service that's the most friendly to non-Japanese in Japan. It's going to come online, I think, around March or something. We are in the whole process of consulting with them about all the horrible stories that you and I have about Japanese banks. Oh my gosh, don't even get me started. The first thing we did is we got the entire Core 50 group to come in and have a discussion with Sony people.
At 50 gaijin.
50 gaijin, all long-term residents.
Yes.
Who love Japan but hate Japanese banks.
And speak Japanese.
They all discussed, like, all different aspects of, we feel like criminals when we go into Japanese banks. And it's so frustrating. And how many times have we all cried in Japanese banks and stuff, right?
I cried just this afternoon.
You did?
I did. Huge crocodile tears.
Really? Because I do. I literally cry at Japanese banks sometimes. I've cried three times. Anyway, when I was able to bring that group in and bring the Sony people in and see them sort of interacting and communicating and the Japanese side truly interested in what the Gaikokushin side is saying, honestly interacting with them and trying to figure out a better service for the Gaikokushin, that was an incredible sense of satisfaction to me.
Wow.
I studied international relations in Boston. I feel like every single day is sort of that, right? Like trying to figure out the win-win for the Japanese side and the non-Japanese side and bring people together. And so those are the moments when I feel most satisfied when that happens.
Wonderful. I like that story.
So my theme for this year is kind of intentional. Like I really want to live with intent. The whole concept of we're so busy, we don't have time to really concentrate on what we're doing at the moment. Like, I'm really trying to concentrate on this, on you right now. How about you this year? Do you have a theme?
Creativity or maybe creation. And part of it is this podcast.
Mm.
And so I've been doing recordings since late last summer. And I've been learning how to do it. Doing a podcast actually isn't that easy. All the technical learnings and how to record, how to edit, how to upload
really
stuff and all this stuff. But it's a lot of fun and I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I guess this year I want to do the podcast and so far it's been nothing but fun. Feedback has been great. It's pretty good. So I guess my theme for this year would be creation, creativity, something like that.
How do we bring together minds of people who are very different, but then are trying to look for a new alternative to how we do things? And what I'm trying to get at with this podcast, with you, what you're doing with your creation and your idea for this year, is that I think in order to make a change and in order to somehow sort of focus us down a new road or like a different road or something that helps towards survival of humanity and things.
Ruth, I have to tell you one thing. My podcast isn't that deep.
No, but I'm trying to say is that one of the most important things is that everybody has lots of options for information.
Right.
So they need people like you to lighten them up and think, okay, maybe I will listen to something else besides what I usually listen to. Then you get different, you know, viewpoints.
Because think about it. I've lived in Japan 30 years. Mm-hmm. I assume you've lived in Japan 30 years.
32.
Okay. So
wait, why are we 2 years off? Wait, when did you come? What year?
I came this year in, I came this time in 1991.
If we graduated the same year in high school, so you didn't come right after college here?
No, I actually came to Japan the first time right after high school.
Okay.
And I lived here for about a year and a half, and then I went back to university in the U.S.
Yeah.
Graduated in 91. Already had a job with a Japanese company, and then I've been here this time since 1991. So if you add it all up, maybe it's 31 years, maybe it's... I just like round numbers.
Wait, if you graduated in 1984, why did you graduate college in 1991?
Because I...
Did
wow,
you
look
play?
At you.
I think you might have played.
Look at you, little mathematician over here. After high school, I worked for a summer to save up enough money for a round-trip ticket to Japan.
Okay.
And I came to Japan on a tourist visa.
Yes.
And I looked for a job. I found a job at Nova.
Nova. Ha, 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 ha.
Exactly.
I'm glad you came. Thank you for coming.
Well,
me
likewise.
Too. Me too. Thank you for coming.
Well, I looked at your profile on LinkedIn to do a little bit of research about
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. And one interesting little quinky dink is that you and I graduated from high school the very same year.
1984, baby.
You got that right. What two songs were in the top 40, do you remember, in 1984?
Top 40? Well, I was a cheerleader, so I'll tell you what was popular among the cheerleaders.
Oh.
Dun, 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 dun. Eye of the Tiger. That was a really important one. My favorite song?
By who? Who was the who sang
Eye of the Tiger?
Yes.
Rocky.
No, who was the band? Who was the band that sang the song?
I used to be a DJ,
so this I know.
I don't know. Eye of the Tiger.
Survivor.
Aerosmith. Survivor. Oh my gosh, there were so many songs that were popular.
Thriller.
Yeah, well, of course, that's like a given. So all of my Japanese friends say, English songs are so hard to figure out what the words are. And I'm like, that's totally true, even for me.
Yeah.
Like, for the longest time, I thought...
Yeah, it's true.
Wait, what is it? What is his song? Keep on. So, keep on with the force, don't stop. Don't stop till you get enough, right?
Right, yes.
For the longest time, I thought it was, keep on to the post office. Don't stop till you get enough. And I was like, man, Michael Jackson must love the post office.
Adiós, amigos.
Keep on to the post office.
All right, I'm really dating myself here.
Okay.
Okay, so the Kinks.
Yes.
Sang a song called You Really Got Me.
You really got me down. You got me so I don't know what I'm doing.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yes. But when they say, you really got me, you really got me, I thought they were saying Idi Amin.
That's funny.
You know who Idi Amin was?
I do. He was bad.
Yeah. He was like a dictator in Africa.
But
he was, when I heard that song, when the Kinks were on the radio, because I grew up on FM radio.
Yeah. Me too.
I guess that was in the news or something. I should probably research it, but...
It probably was, because that was when there was a doctor from Scotland, and there's a famous book about this. A doctor from Scotland was the one who treated Idi Amin, and there's some book about it, which I read. But
from your dad's bookcase?
No, not from my dad's bookcase. But yeah, Idi Amin was not a good guy.
No, he was not.
But I can understand how you make a mistake like that.
Yeah, that's true. So how do you like this place?
This place is great. The pasta looked really good.
This is the food menu. I'm kind of hungry, too.
No, I trust you. Just order what you like. I'm not so, 100% focused on meat. I don't eat much meat.
Me either. But you like pasta.
Are you plant-based, pretty much?
No, I'm moderation-based.
Yeah, I try to be plant-based.
すみません. おすすめの pasta は何があるんですか? アラビアータ, I like that.
Okay.
アラビアタ pasta と...
Can we get the organic vegetable salad?
Yes, the organic vegetable salad.
これ, creamy mashed potato.
That's not quite a mushroom. I mean, potatoes and mushrooms are a little bit different, but hey, I guess it's still...
Sounds good. That sounds good.
Vegetable-based, yeah. じゃあ、とりあえずそれでお願いします. You want one more beer? Or something else? Oh, go for your yuzu thing.
Yeah, I want that yuzu thing.
Yeah.
あの、こう飲み物でユズ系のものあったよね? ユズ、アルコールなしの。 ユズ...
ユズ サラトラクーラー.
それ。 Okay, I'm going to go to the bathroom real fast before our food comes. Dan, can I go?
Yeah, you may go.
Okay, I will be back.
And this would be an appropriate time to bring this episode to a close. That was Ruth Jarman, an incredible ambassador for all things Japan. Her 6 books can be found at Amazon, and links to her books, her company, and her profile are located in the show notes. Thank you very much for listening. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe on iTunes. Even add a comment. It would be much appreciated. Until the next episode, stay safe, be good, and thanks, everybody.